Welcome, everyone. We're here with Secretary Duncan and Dr. Holmgren just after the President's announcement about science, technology, engineering, and mathematics education. The President just announced a tremendous partnership between private industry and the government to really excite and motivate students all around the country to get involved in math and science careers. We're going to have a brief online discussion and respond to your questions that you're posting on the website. Secretary Duncan, why don't you begin and introduce yourself to the community here and tell us a little bit about why the announcement excited you so much.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Arnie Duncan. This is a pretty extraordinary day for the STEM fields in our country. You have leadership from the top. You have a president that's passionately committed to this. He said repeatedly that we just can't be, the next generation just can't be the consumers. We have to be the producers. We have to help those students become the makers and the inventors of the new economy. And if we can do that well, America is going to continue to be very, very strong. So this is an extraordinarily exciting time. We want to make science and math and technology and engineering fun. We want to make it exciting. We want to make it engaging. We want to start at the youngest of ages. Today, the President announced over $260 million in donations and in-kind contributions coming in from the corporate and philanthropic community, a chance to have a very, very significant impact. And we want to do everything we can to work out of school as well as in school to dramatically improve the quality of math and science, engineering and technology education in our schools. This is not just a Department of Education initiative. This is a leadership that's coming straight from the White House. And with us is Dr. Holmgren, who's the President's advisor on science education. He's done a phenomenal job of working with us, working with NASA, working with NSF. I'd like to turn it over to Dr. Holmgren to talk about what we're doing, not as a Department of Education, but as an administration.
Well, thank you, Secretary Duncan. It's a great privilege for me to be the science and technology advisor to a President of the United States who really understands the importance of science, technology, innovation, and above all, science, technology, engineering, and math education. For the future of our country. The reason the President has launched this set of initiatives from the White House in cooperation with the Department of Education, the Department of Energy, NASA, the National Science Foundation, is that he understands that the importance of doing a better job of educating our kids in science, technology, engineering, and math is really threefold. We need to generate a new cohort of scientists and technologists who are going to make the breakthroughs that help us address the great challenges we face in the economy, in the environment, in national security. We also want to develop the tech-savvy workforce. We're going to need to be competitive in the 21st century. And we want to develop the science-savvy citizenry who can participate effectively in a democracy where more and more of the decisions that have to get made in that democracy involve science and technology. So it really is a multifaceted set of reasons for getting this right. And we're determined to get it right. This is a high priority for the President, it's a high priority for me, a high priority for Secretary Duncan. And as today's initiatives indicate, we have a tremendous opportunity for partnership with the private sector, the philanthropic sector, the foundations, and the government at the federal level, at the state level, at the local level. And I think together we're going to get it done.
That's wonderful. So the President ended his remarks really with a call to parents. I'm going to pull a question from Merton Thompson from Louisville, Kentucky, who echoed that. Secretary Duncan, what's the role of parents within a child's education? Dr. Holmgren, how do we engage parents and the general public more in the practice of science?
I'll start and turn it over to you. It's so critically important that parents be actively engaged. And as much as we want to dramatically improve the quality of what's going on within schools, parents are always going to be our students' first teachers, and they're always going to be our most important teachers. And where you see students' education taking off, it's a partnership between teachers and parents working together. When parents aren't engaged, when they're not active, when they're not responsible for their own children's education, it's very, very tough on those teachers to get the job done just by themselves. So where you have real partnerships, we have all the adults in the child's life working together, great things are going to happen for that child.
Another respect in which parents are extremely important is demanding excellence in the teaching that their kids are receiving. The President talked today about his recent trip to Asia, where he talked to leaders in South Korea, Japan, and China, among other things, about education. And one of the things those leaders told the President, as he related today, is that the greatest demand for high quality in their education comes from the parents. Parents in Korea, the parents in China, the parents in Japan demanding excellence in the education their kids get, including particularly science, technology, engineering, and math education. It would be great if that happened here as well.
Absolutely. So speaking of teachers, Carl Clapper from Central New Jersey has the comment that says we need to separate certification from education. Secretary Duncan, I know this is something you've put a lot of work on. How do we recruit and prepare even better teachers for our kids today?
There's a lot in that question. We could take a lot of time. But let me say a couple things. I would love to find much more creative ways to get folks who know math, who know science, who know physics, who knows engineering into our classrooms. We don't have enough teachers who really know the content extraordinarily well, particularly in poor and disadvantaged communities, and where we can better partner with people coming out of industry or people with that deep content knowledge. I think that'd be of tremendous use and benefit for our students. So we want to be much more creative as we go forward. Secondly, we have had a shortage of math and science teachers for, I think, 3 decades. I don't want to talk about it for another 3 decades. I want to fix it. And we've been blessed to have unprecedented resources. And I think particularly, again, in underserved communities, I think we should pay math and science teachers more money. And we're going to put literally billions of dollars on the table to reward excellence, to get folks to teach in hard-to-staff communities, and to get them to work in hard-to-staff subject areas with a particular focus on math and science. And in long term, we want to think much more about not just certifications on a piece of paper, but on teacher effectiveness. You can have all the fanciest of degrees in the world, but if students aren't learning, are you really making a difference? So we want to move over time from sort of paper credentials to really looking at, are students really learning? And those are the teachers where they're making a tremendous difference in students' lives. Those are teachers we want to better reward and highlight and learn from. And if we can do that well, I think we can transform the quality of education in our country.
I'll go to a question from Ross Parent of Denver, Colorado, who comments about FIRST Robotics. You saw on the president's announcement a wonderful robot and some really charming kids, very proud of their invention. Secretary Duncan, you had a career as a professional athlete before you became an educator. What's the role in competitions like FIRST in exciting and motivating kids? And Dr. Holgren, how do we get the scientific community to help kids build those robots and create those kind of catalyzing after-school programs?
Well, first of all, I would say that the whole robotics effort is an example of the fact that kids learn best by doing. They learn by making things, by doing things much more effectively than just by being lectured at about things. And I think this robotics competition in which we saw a demonstration of one of the winners earlier today is a great example of that. What we have happening in some of these initiatives that are being rolled out today, that were being rolled out today by the president, is we have the private sector, the philanthropic sector, and the government working together to create some new activities and approaches in which we'll have more competitions. The winners of those competitions will be brought to the White House. The president was very clear, saying, you know, we bring the NCAA champions to the White House. We should also bring the champion students in science and engineering competitions to the White House. In fact, we've done some of that already. I've had several groups of science and math winners in the Oval Office with the president, and we're going to do more of that. But we're going to use prizes, I think, in a much more wide-ranging way to energize kids to get engaged in these competitions and to do well.
John said it perfectly. If we really want students to be engaged, we have to teach them in an engaging way. And if this is simply memorizing facts and memorizing the periodic table, we're not going to get the kind of innovation we want. But if students are engaged in real competition, if they're working together, basically every high school in this country has a football team. Why doesn't every high school in this country have a robotics team? I think that's the kind of opportunity we want. And we have to have a particular focus on women and on minorities. We have to get more people engaged in math and science education. And things like the robotics competitions are just a heck of a lot of fun. The winners, they have 70,000 people in the Georgia Dome for the championship. This is a huge, huge deal. And we need to make sure more students have those kinds of opportunities.
We've had a couple questions come in, one from Indiana, one from San Diego, about the nonprofit sector. Gentlemen, could you each talk about what's the role of the nonprofit sector in really improving STEM education?
Well, first of all, a number of the major foundations, the MacArthur Foundation, the Carnegie Foundation, are involved in funding the initiatives that we launched today. The philanthropic sector is committed, I think, as the private sector and the government sector is, to lifting the level of science, technology, engineering, and math education in this country. And what the philanthropic sector does when it's committed to something is it comes up with some of the money. And they're doing that here. The total value of the initiatives launched today was, as the Secretary already mentioned, $260 million and rising. We expect that number to go up as more partners stand up and start to participate.
This is the kind of thing that's so important for our country that we all have to work, be working together. This has to be all hands on deck. So we're going to try and step up our game. Again, you have a president who's passionately committed to this, has put together a leadership team to work hard, but the government can't begin to do this alone. You have to have the nonprofit sector, you have to have the schools, you have to have the corporations, you have to have the foundations working together. And those kinds of partnerships, those public-private partnerships, are what's going to lead the country where we need to go and to provide all students with the opportunities they need, particularly from an early age, to be engaged, to be learning, and to really start to build their passion for math and science and technology.
I should have mentioned, by the way, the Gates Foundation, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, who along with MacArthur and the Carnegie Corporation of New York are major funders of the initiative we rolled out today.
Great. Here's a question from Colette Casolini, and, or it's actually a statement, but I thought both of you might want to respond to it. She says, support the teachers with professional development opportunities to bring these types of programs into the school, otherwise it won't happen. What do you think of that?
She hit the nail on the head, and we want to do really innovative things in the summers and after school, and with TV programming that's much more focused on math and science education. But if we don't impact what's going on in the classroom, we're never going to get where we need to go. The more we can provide high-quality professional development so that teachers have a deep content knowledge, that there are huge benefits. It's just simply the only way we're going to get there. And so whether it's partnerships with universities and higher ed institutions to create those meaningful professional development opportunities and really create those content-rich environments that our students desperately need, it is just absolutely critically important. And so that's got to be at the heart of our collective efforts, is improving the quality of instruction in classrooms.
We have a few questions here about measures of success in testing. So I thought maybe you could respond to some of these. A question, how do you change measures of success to reflect this new way of learning about inquiry, about engagement, about solving problems?
I'll say that the end goal, how do you measure success? Ultimately, the president's drawn a line in the sand. He said by 2020, we want to again have the highest percent of college graduates in the world. And America used to lead the world 2.5 decades ago in the number of college graduates. We've flatlined, other countries have passed us by, and I think we're paying a price for that as a country. We have to educate our way to a better economy. So at the end of the day, everything we do has to be towards that ultimate goal of getting many more of our students graduating from high school, dramatically increasing graduation rates, dramatically reducing dropout rates, and then ultimately having many more of our high school graduates be prepared to compete successfully and graduate from college. We're putting through the Race to the Top initiative $4 billion out to states to work together to raise the bar and come up with common standards. As part of that, we have $350 million to come up with the next generation of assessments. So you have to go way beyond just sort of fill out the bubble tests and really think about how you're helping students learn throughout their educational trajectory. We have 48 states, 48 governors, 48 state school chiefs working together. And over the next couple years, I think we can really break through on a critically important issue. Raise the bar for everyone, higher standards, but then have much better assessments behind those.
That's fine. So we've had a couple people on the blog roll here ask about dollars. Secretary Duncan, you mentioned a few pieces there. Maybe you could provide a summary of what the Department of Education and the other federal agencies are doing around spending in this arena.
Well, I'll start just in our department and turn it over to Dr. Hogan to talk about what the entire administration is doing. With the president's leadership and the bipartisan support of Congress, we've had an unprecedented investment in education, over $100 billion in new money, just sort of never happened before at every level, early childhood, K-12, excuse me, in higher ed. So it's just a remarkable opportunity. What we also have is not just unprecedented dollars, but unprecedented discretionary dollars to really invest in those states, those districts, those nonprofits, and those universities that are willing to do two things: raise the bar for all students and dramatically close the achievement gap. And so whether it's the Race to the Top Fund, which is $4 billion, whether it's the Invest in Innovation Fund, the I3 Fund, which is $650 million, coming right behind that will be school improvement grants of $3.5 billion. We've never had a better opportunity to invest in what's working. And what I've said repeatedly is that the good ideas are never going to come from Washington. The best ideas in education are always going to come at the local level. Great teachers, great principals making a difference in students' lives. What we want to do is invest unprecedented resources behind those best practices, learn from them, replicate them, take it to scale, and move these pockets of excellence, these islands of excellence, and make them systems of excellence. We have a chance, finally, to be able to do that.
Certainly by far the largest part of the new government money for education is the money that Secretary Duncan has described as going through the Department of Education, but there are other efforts. Secretary Chu in the Department of Energy, the NSF Director Arden Bement have announced a program called Re-Energize at a level of some tens of millions of dollars, which is intended to use the Clean Energy Challenge as a way to inspire and energize a new generation of kids who would work in science and engineering and mathematics related to that particular challenge. There are a variety of other efforts spread through the cabinet departments and the White House and the White House offices. But I would say the most important thing that's new about today's announcements is the remarkable set of partnerships that bring in the philanthropic sector and the private sector with both contributions of money and in-kind contributions, pledging resources in terms of the time and effort of the employees of these companies. We have Time Warner Cable launching a campaign to connect over a million students to engaging after-school science, technology, engineering, and math activities. You've got the Discovery Channel that's going to be producing $150 million worth of effort to deliver to kids in the after-school hours, 3 to 5 in the afternoon, interactive science and technology content on their cable televisions. We've got a program that's aimed at developing science labs for every middle school and every high school so that kids can learn more science and engineering in hands-on ways. And again, that's being very, very heavily funded with in-kind contributions from business. So it's not just government money that's going to get this done. It's private sector money, it's philanthropic money, and it's these partnerships of folks working together.
Dr. Holgren, you're an esteemed scientist. Actually, a couple questions here seem to speak about a concern that science is just going to be limited to a list of facts. Maybe you could talk a little bit about how facts play a role in the practice of science, and then Secretary Duncan, what are the implications for that around Race to the Top and the new assessments that are coming?
Well, first of all, I'd say science has never been just about facts, and science teaching should never be about memorizing facts. It should be about understanding concepts, figuring out how to think both critically and creatively about problems. And in fact, one of the reasons that science education is a particularly valuable thing, well beyond the potential breakthroughs that can be made relating to health and the economy and environment and so on, is this skill of thinking systematically and critically about new problems. It's always more important to be able to think creatively about new problems than it is to memorize the facts about the old ones, although we also believe that facts are important in decision making. When we think about the decisions the government faces where science and technology are involved, we want those decisions to be made in light of the best knowledge that we can bring to bear, the most relevant facts we can bring to bear. But when you're thinking about training the next generation, you much more want to think about understanding how science works, understanding how to think creatively and systematically.
So one last question for you both. It sort of touches on something a little bit earlier. It's from New York. It asks, what policy initiatives are planned to make teaching as the first choice for a new grad instead of choosing to head to Wall Street or to industry?
I'll start, and I think that's one of the most important things we can do. Over the next 4 to 6 years, we have as many as 1 million teachers who are going to retire. So baby boomer generation that's going out. And our ability to attract and more importantly retain great talent over the next 4 to 6 years is going to shape public education in our country for the next 30 years. It's an absolute generational shift. And so we're spending a tremendous amount of time thinking about how we make teaching the revered profession that it needs to be and should be. How do we get the hardest working, most committed to come into education? We have lots of ideas around recruitment. Let me say one thing very specifically that we're not fighting for, we're not working on, is done. As of July 1st, Congress passed what's called income-based repayment, IBR. And folks who graduate either from college or from a school of education or a doctor or a lawyer or someone finishing their PhD in science, their loan repayments will now be indexed to their income. And after 10 years of public service or teaching, any loans they still have outstanding will be eliminated, will be erased. And so there are many folks who historically wanted to go into education but simply couldn't do it because they had loans of $60,000, $80,000, $100,000. So rather than following their heart and following their passion, they didn't do other things. With income-based repayment now, dramatic reductions in loan repayments, and then ultimately after 10 years of service, those loans are going away. So this is the start of a very serious effort to remove the financial impediments to teaching, but then put in place a series of incentives to get the hardest working, the most committed, the most talented to come into education and serve our children. This is a national call of service.
As the Secretary says, we need to pay our teachers better. Certainly, we need to respect them more. Another thing the President pointed out from his trip around Asia and his conversations about education in those countries is the degree to which science and engineering and math teachers get a degree of respect in the society that's equivalent to the respect accorded other highly trained professionals, physicians, lawyers, and so on. Another thing we can do is make it easier at the stage when these folks are doing their college education. We can provide financial aid that is tied to the willingness to take science and math and education courses together and become prepared to be an effective teacher in these domains.
So thank you both for participating here. Thank you for many of the questions that came through. I'm sorry we don't have the time to get through every single one of them. Do you have any closing comments, gentlemen?
This is just an exciting time. This is great for children. It's great for the country. We have to work together to make this happen.
The President called for all hands on deck in this effort, as the Secretary already mentioned, and I think one of the reflections of all hands on deck is the sort of interest in the public that's reflected in this kind of webcast interaction. And I would say to all those who are watching, keep up your interest in this, keep engaging in every way you can, because we need the support of the whole public if we're going to make this work.
Thank you very much.